practice. I welcome everyone to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. On behalf of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we gather here each week to follow the path that Krishna has established in Bhagavad Gita. Matchata matkata pranau bodhya paparasparam katayam taschamam nityam nikta yukta upashati. To gain the determination and enthusiasm for devotional service by coming together, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. The supreme blessing of the Lord comes when He causelessly directs us to the association of devotees who have a taste to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, and who have an enthusiasm to render devotional service as the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Today we have two very special guests. I would like to speak something about them briefly. First of all, we would like to welcome back our head pujari, perhaps the most lovable personality in Brahma's creation, that intoxicated Vaishnav who's always showing mercy upon me. Let us welcome His Grace Jananivas Prabhu. Today, for the first time since Radha Gopinath Temple opened in the mid-80s, we have with us His Holiness Bhakti Raghava Swami Maharaj. He is a very old and dear friend of Jananivas Prabhu as well. Raised in Canada of North America, he came to Krishna Consciousness Movement in 1974 in Ottawa. Shortly after that, Srila Prabhupada had a burning interest to establish his projects in India. Srila Prabhupada personally addressed all the leaders of ISKCON worldwide to send capable devotees to India to establish the mission here. And Prabhupada did this on several occasions. And every time he started a center, he tried to recruit very good men and women from the European and American countries to help. It was in 1976, Bhakti Raghava Maharaj just innocently came for a Gaur Purnima festival. But while here, seeing his potential to render substantial service, he was requested to never go back. So he stayed in Mayapur Dham, where he was in charge of recruiting new devotees and training the new bhaktas. After some time, he pioneered as the director of the first Namhata preaching programs in Bengal, where in Bengal, Orissa, and Assam, he helped to establish 1,200 Namhat centers. Following in the footsteps of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Next, he went to Calcutta to begin an outreach program to the youth of India in the colleges. And he started the BYS, which was the Bhaktivedanta Youth Services, which was the forerunner of the IYF, ISKCON Youth Forum, and brought many very intelligent, wonderful people to Krishna consciousness. Later, there was a great need to help develop a farm in Secunderabad, near Hyderabad. So he went there and became the temple president of Secunderabad for several years. And then, due to the mysterious will of the Lord, he was not given entrance to India for over 12 years. During that 12 years, he served as a GBC in Canada, developed Montreal and other parts of Canada. And on the request of the leadership of ISKCON, he focused on developing Varnashram Dharma as well as farm communities. And for the last several years, he's been doing just that in Indonesia. And also, he's very active in education. For that purpose, he just received a master's degree in traditional education, and he's helping to create systems, culture, curriculum for educating the youth within our society. But one wonderful story which exhibits just a drop from the ocean of his extraordinary qualities took place in about 1984 in Sri Mayapur Dham. Just after Gaur Purnima, a band of armed dacoits, about 30 strong, raided our temple with bombs, hatchets, knives, and other such weapons. They came, they broke into the temple. Their intent was to break or steal the deities, to harm the devotees. It was a horrible scene of violence. Horrible scene. Devotees were bewildered. The armed guard that was hired for ISKCON Mayapur ran up to the top floor of, I think, the Lotus building and locked himself in so the dacoits would never find him. So the devotees were on their own. And as they broke in the temple, they were beating devotees, and on their way to the altar, His Holiness Bhakti Raghava Maharaj, who was then a brahmachari, he just lunged into that temple room. Heroic as anything, Janani Vas Prabhu could tell the story. He was battling against those people. And one of the dacoits threw a bomb at his leg and blew his leg off. And it was Pankajangari Prabhu, Janani Vas Prabhu's brother, who was on the rooftop shooting guns at the dacoits, that helped to somehow or other finally drive them away. So yes, you see him on crutches with only one leg. But this is a great ornament. It is a great ornament. He gave up one of the most precious limbs of the body, willingly and gratefully, to protect the Vaishnavas and in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Please know that that trauma did not in any way disturb his faith or his enthusiasm. His commitment to preaching Krishna consciousness, serving the Vaishnavas, and chanting the holy names only increased through this experience. So let us pray on this day that we can follow in the holy footprint of His Holiness Bhakti Raghava Swami Maharaj. Let us very, very enthusiastically welcome him to our temple today. His scholarship of the scriptures, his commitment to Srila Prabhupada's legacy, his humility, humor, will certainly charm your hearts today. Now, Maharaj, we beg you to kindly speak to all the devotees.
Thank you, sir. Hare Krishna. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. I feel very blessed and very honored to be here in the presence of so many exalted devotees, in particular His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj and His Grace Janani Vas Prabhu and all of you who have come here for the Sunday program. The first glimpse I had of the Chaupati temple was maybe just 2 years ago on a video. At that time, Indra Dumna Maharaj was here addressing all the members. The camera was focused on both Radhanath Maharaj and Indra Dumna Maharaj. And then at one particular point, the camera went through the whole temple room showing all the devotees. That was the first glimpse I had of the temple room and the number of devotees attending. It is rare to find such an enthusiastic group of devotees, and I would say also a committed congregation such as the Chaupati temple. And I feel very honored just to be here. And I know that This is very much due to the mercy of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, who has dedicated himself so nicely in building up this temple and this congregation. Maharaj is very eloquently, actually, I think Krishna's blessing Maharaj in speaking very eloquently, and that is to his credit, of course, about different devotees. I'm not sure exactly which area to concentrate on. Generally speaking, devotees, they don't like, not inclined so much to speak about themselves. However, maybe I can try and share some thoughts or realizations that naturally come as we become more and more involved in the preaching activities which were started by Srila Prabhupada. I consider that within our society we have, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, many exalted personalities who are doing wonderful preaching. One never thinks that his preaching is so exalted. Maybe I can speak a little bit about a few realizations that have come by being connected and being involved with Srila Prabhupada's preaching mission. Actually, in the very beginning, when I was a new bhakta in the Ottawa temple, that was in 1974. At one particular time, devotees actually asked me, "Don't you want to take initiation?" I remember replying, "Srila Prabhupada has already so many disciples. Why does he need me?" You know, that was the mentality. Of course, I did not understand or realize at the time that I was the one needing Srila Prabhupada. That without his connection, without being connected with him, without receiving his mercy, I could never accomplish anything in life. We came to know that Srila Prabhupada, Ottawa Temple was a very small temple. It still is, actually, a small temple. We were just a few devotees. And different than the Toronto Temple or Vancouver Temple, not many visitors, not many sannyasis would come there. So we were somewhat isolated. But we came to know that Srila Prabhupada was coming to New Vrindavan. And in those days, I'm sure many of you have heard, every single move that Srila Prabhupada took, whatever he spoke on that particular day, practically speaking, was known to everyone. Was the news just went around like lightning. So this news came that Prabhupada was coming, and we were at least three devotees in our temple who were ready for initiation. That's when somebody asked me, don't you want to take initiation? So anyways, one of our devotees, inconceivably to me, picked up the telephone to call Srila Prabhupada. It was inconceivable for someone to pick the telephone and call and speak to Srila Prabhupada. So I was amazed and surprised how he could do that. Anyways, ultimately he did pick up the telephone, but of course he didn't speak to Srila Prabhupada. It was just a trick to find out if Prabhupada was there by asking if, you know, speaking to person to person. So it was confirmed that Prabhupada was there. So that very same day, Ottawa is quite far from New Vrindavan. I don't know, by vehicle, something like 12 hours. That very evening, as soon as it was confirmed that Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan, we all jumped in a vehicle and we drove all night and we reached New Vrindavan. That next morning, Srila Prabhupada was giving initiations. I had never been to New Vrindavan. The only temple I had been to was in Montreal and Toronto. Had not seen many sannyasis, but when I reached New Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada was of course always surrounded by so many sannyasis, and mostly of course because Srila Prabhupada began his preaching in America, all his sannyasis or devotees were Americans, practically speaking. And Americans are big-bodied, isn't it? Tall and big. So I had never seen Srila Prabhupada, only in pictures. And like I have heard it expressed by many of my godbrothers, when I saw Srila Prabhupada, I was surprised that he was so small in stature, you know, walking beside these like giant sannyasis and devotees. That was the first darshan I had of Srila Prabhupada, and that day, Maharaj, you must have been there at that time, but we didn't know each other, in summer of 74, in the lawn, somewhere under a tree, Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was there. Devotees fanning Srila Prabhupada. I think about 30 or 35 devotees. I was number 34. I was wondering if Prabhupada was going to initiate me or not. Anyways, I was before last one to be called, you know, to receive my beads, japa. Although it was summer, New Vrindavan water was quite cold at that time. But we only stayed for a short time. That was my first encounter with a larger number of devotees and especially sannyasis. I was a little bit attracted. Well, maybe more than a little bit. I was quite a bit attracted to sannyasis. previously, before being a devotee, I had gone to seminary actually for about 7 years. Thinking of becoming a priest. Didn't quite make it as a priest, but here we are, anyways. So we went back to Ottawa, of course, and I was staying in Ottawa, mostly doing service in the kitchen. I became the head cook. My father was a cook, actually. Unfortunately, not a vegetarian cook. But I did pick up a few things from him. I used to work in the summer as a student. He used to work in lumber camps in Canada, different places. Anyways, I like cooking, and there was an opening at the Ottawa Temple. I mean, we were only a few devotees. Somebody had to cook, so I volunteered. And that's when I used to listen to different cassettes I was mentioning this morning. One of the cassettes was Jane Nivas Prabhu, who was translating, I think it was two songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One is Jeev Jago and the other one. Yeah. And I was very charmed by his translation, you know, and of course the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And you know, I was in the kitchen, in charge of the kitchen. We used to have wonderful Sunday feasts. I had only one complaint from the Indian congregation, major complaint, and that for the Sunday feast program, there were not enough sabjis. There were too many sweets, too many sweet preparations. So anyways, we had to adjust the menu a little bit. But I used to listen to these. One time I remember hearing a lecture about Chutananda Swami at the time, because he was in Mayapur in those very early days. And used to hear these kirtans during the Gaur Purnima festival, you know, those early days in Mayapur, I guess 73, 74. I remember in his lecture, Chutananda Swami was mentioning how now we will all go to Nabadweep, right, on Parikram. We will all go to Nabadweep, and he was addressing the devotees, you know, because everyone, probably most of the devotees were coming for the first time to India. So we didn't know many things about how to conduct ourselves and how to deal with people and whatnot. So he was kind of preparing the devotees before going to Nabadweep. So he says, we'll be having kirtan. You will see many things in Nabadweep. You will probably see people doing things that may be not too correct. And then he said something like, yes, you will probably experience or come in contact with people who are like rascals. I forget the exact term, but he says they are transcendental rascals. So don't judge them in a material way. It means they are born in Nabadweep, Mayapur. They're not ordinary people. So be careful how you deal with them. So I used to hear these different classes and these different lectures, and I was dreaming, actually I was thinking, how many years is Krishna going to keep me as a head cook at the Ottawa Temple? And I had no idea how long I would be there, but I didn't really mind, because I was happy doing my service. It was very pleasant days, small temple, different preaching activities and whatnot. And that's when we, after getting second initiation in 75, we installed small Gornitai deities. They're still there at the Ottawa Temple. After some time, actually during the year 1975, our temple president, whose name was Amshu at that time, he told a few of the brahmacharis, okay, you've been serving now for the last close to 2 years. I'd like to take you to India this next Gaur Purnima. So we were all very excited. Three of us, brahmacharis, Lakshminath Prabhu and Krishnadas Kaviraj Prabhu, who's serving. They're both continuing serving in Canada, Montreal and Toronto. And myself, the three of us, we went with our temple president for the first time. He had been to Mayapur, to India before. So I was telling Radhanath Maharaj a little earlier how we were all joking with our temple president, we're not coming back. we're going to stay in India. He didn't like that very much. And there was no question of us, you know, thinking of, we were only a few devotees at the temple. So when we got to, it was a rather memorable trip, because we flew from either Montreal or Toronto to New York. 1976 was the first year that the first Boeing, 707 or something, was flying from New York to Calcutta, Dum Dum Airport. Still call it Dum Dum, Dum Dum Airport. You know why they call it the Dum Dum Airport? I came to know after some time, because during the World War II, close to Calcutta, they had factories making bullets. And every day the noise was dum, 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 dum. And they ended up making the airport at that place, so they call it the Dum Dum Airport. Very deep. So anyways, we left New York. I didn't know at the time, but in that airplane, we flew 350 devotees, accompanied with His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj. They were carrying Radha Damodar Didis to India. Can you imagine? That was the first and the only time I flew with so many devotees in an airplane. So we were chanting japa and nodding out, chanting also throughout so many hours that it took. And then at one particular time, it was like morning, it was time for Mangal Arati, right? So you're flying, 30,000 feet, you know, in the air. The deities of Radha Damodar were in the front of the airplane. So somebody announced, okay, everybody, you all get up. It's time for Mangal Arati. Don't dance too much. But everyone can go and have darshan. So we circumambulated the plane. You know, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan were in the front of the plane with the deities. I mean, that's the only time that happened to me in my life, you know. We had darshan of their lordships and, you know, finished Mangal Arati. And we were able to land safely, you know, later on. We landed, we had to stop over in Tehran or something. When we landed there, it might have been an unexpected landing, because the airport was surrounded by people with machine guns, you know. Anyways, we got out of there as soon as possible and proceeded to Calcutta. So we landed in Calcutta, and Jnanivas Prabhu was already in Mayapur. You were there since 72 or something, or 71? 72, huh? So the trip to Mayapur, it's really good for me to reminisce on this, because it's like I'm coming back to India and I'll be going back to Mayapur after 13 years. So the trip to Mayapur was, of course, very unique. They had to rent so many buses. And, you know, the devotees with so much of luggage. So anyone who's been to Mayapur, I don't know how the road is now, probably similar. From Calcutta to Mayapur, you know, the last stretch very winding road and bumpy road and whatnot, but that is when you can start getting darshan of the Ganga, Ganges. So that was a very wonderful experience to be able to go to Mayapur. So at the time, actually, I didn't have any definite plans to stay in India. But then, as Radhanath Maharaj mentioned a few minutes ago, Srila Prabhupada was quite openly speaking about and asking his leaders, and the news just went around to most people, to most temples, that Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees from different continents. He wanted that the GBC, you know, decide and have devotees stay in India to help the main temples, like in Mayapur, Vrindavan, and Bombay especially, right? Those were the three main temples at that time. So I came to know about it, naturally. And then the thought started, you know, going in my head, boy, it would really be nice if I could stay in India. So as a very dutiful brahmachari, I went to see my temple president, Hare Krishna Prabhu. I came to know that Srila Prabhupada wants devotees to stay in India to help in the different temples. And then he looked at me and basically said, forget it. Forget about it. Because you're the head pujari, you're the head cook, and we only have a few devotees, just forget about it. That was in Mayapur. So after Mayapur, naturally, after the Mayapur section of the festival, we go to Vrindavan. So we all went to Vrindavan, and that same news was there. And then, although my temple president had said, you can't go, I thought, well, let me go and ask if they still need people. So I went. At that time, it was Bhavananda, at that time Maharaj, and one other sannyasi. They were taking interviews. Means they were looking after people, looking for people. So I went up to them, and then I asked them, you still need devotees to stay in India? Very innocently. And of course they said, of course we need, you know, we still need people to stay in India. Then I told them, well, I asked my temple president, and he said, no, he doesn't want to. And then one of the sannyasis, I won't tell you his name, he said, you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen to your temple president. I said, no, I think I should listen to my temple president. You know, so I, in my mind, I was very much wanting to stay. But then at the same time, I was duty bound, you know, to my temple president. So then I remember making a small prayer in my mind. And it was something like, okay, Krishna, you know I want to stay, but this is what's happening right now, so you decide whether I stay or don't stay. And at that time, it was like deciding to stay for the rest of your life. I mean, it was that kind of, I mean, for me, you know, for me to decide to stay in India was like, I'm going to stay in India for the rest of my life. So it was like I was not so much hesitating, a little bit, but then when I really decided, okay, I really felt good, you know, okay. I'll leave it up to Krishna. So, so then because my temple president didn't want me to stay, and because, you know, that sannyasi had told me, don't listen to the temple president. Anyways, I decided I'll listen to my temple president. So it was time to leave Vrindavan. It was time to go back to Canada. So we all left, went to Delhi, went to the airport, checked in our luggage. My luggage was checked in, was gone on the strap. Standing in line, you know, to go on the plane. You know, somebody tapped me on the shoulder. Actually, it was Jai Pratak Maharaj, who had come to know at the time, in those days, there were no visa requirements for Canadians. I was from Canada. No visa requirements to enter India. But the news had come that Canada had just imposed visa requirements for Indians to go to Canada. So it was only a matter of time that Canada would also do the same, or that India would do the same, rather. So because I was already in the country, somehow he convinced my temple president, you know, because he's already in the country and because of this law that's coming, better he should stay. So I was pulled out of the line. My luggage went to Canada. I didn't have any toothpaste or toothbrush, nothing. Both, at that time, it was Sridhar Maharaj and Jai Pratak Maharaj. They both took me, put me in the taxi. I was sitting right between them. I figured they thought I might change my mind. I was sitting between them in the taxi, and then we drove from the airport to the Delhi temple. At that time, Tejas Prabhu was in charge. And then, you know what to do. I mean, I don't know my way how to go back to Mayapur. So there was one devotee from South America, who was serving in Mayapur for some time. We got to the Delhi temple, I think it was a Sunday feast. So the very next morning, there was a train, or anyway, whatever next train it was, they put this devotee from South America, whom I didn't know, and myself, and one box of Halava Prasadam left over from the Sunday feast on a train, and off we were to Mayapur. So we were eating Halava Prasadam all the way. It was very nicely cooked at that time. And got to Mayapur. Pancharatna Prabhu had been in Mayapur for some months. So, I mean, I had no clothes. You know, I didn't have any luggage, nothing. I remember I had to go and see him because he was in charge of maintenance, or, I mean, devotee maintenance, what they call it, devotee maintenance. So I needed to be maintained, right? So I remember I told him, Prabhu, this is what happened. Here I am. I mean, I'm very happy to be here, but I don't have any luggage at all, nothing. Can you help me out? Can you help me out? So anyway, see, that was my first experience, I guess, with the Indian culture. He got me one of those plastic razors, you know, plastic razors to shave. And at that time in Mayapur, they were making from the, they were making some cloth, right, from the... yeah, handloom cloth, dhotis and whatnot. And that is how I joined Mayapur temple at that time. My first service, because people knew I was a cook, right? So they, I thought also I would try my luck out cooking in India. Of course, we know that in India, the kitchen, at least the kitchen that I was introduced to in Mayapur at the time, was a little bit different than the kitchens in the West, isn't it? So they had these, and they still have probably, I'm sure, these foot knives, right? You know, the foot knife? You cut the sabji and whatever. Well, I didn't have too much experience with foot knives. And so I really cut myself very badly. A few times, and that was the end of my career in the kitchen at the Mayapur temple. I think just a few weeks I was cooking there. And then, anyways, I got into some other services. And And at that time, there were not many devotees in Mayapur. We were living on the boundary wall. It was simple, but very nice. We would, there's only 2 months in the year that's a little bit cold, like December and January. Of course, not cold like in Vrindavan. Mayapur is not as cold as in Vrindavan, but still, you know, somewhat chilly. At that time, we were living on the boundary wall, and they had hand pumps, right? Hand pumps outside. And you would take your bath, you know, you pump your own water, and I remember one morning, it was a little cooler than other mornings, and everyone who was bathing, it was like the vapor from, you know, the cold and whatnot. I mean, it was like making a whole lot of vapor there. Anyways, we stayed there in those facilities, and then the long building wasn't there at the time. There was, you know, it was only the Lotus building, of course. What is it? Yeah, Prabhupada's kutir at the front, and on the other side was the, what is it? On the other side of the kutir was like go down, no? Yeah, which is no longer there, I think, probably since a long time. I missed many of the pastimes that took place when Janadivas Prabhu was there, and it will be very nice if we can hear a little bit from Janadivas Prabhu also, because he was serving, if I'm not mistaken, Srila Prabhupada when Prabhupada was staying in that kutir, isn't it? In the kutir at the front of the temple. So anyways, I was always, from the moment I joined the Hare Krishna movement, you know, very convinced about Srila Prabhupada's teachings and about the movement, especially somehow I felt, to me it was like, you know, coming in contact with the Bhagavatam, with these kinds of literatures, to me that was like proof in itself, you know, that this is standard knowledge, solid knowledge. I mean, that is since long time, I mean, established since a long time, which gave me at least the conviction that the words and the knowledge and the wisdom that is in these literatures is nowhere to be, you know, to be compared. So when I was staying at the Ottawa Temple, I remember, because when I first stayed at the Ottawa Temple, I didn't shave up right away because I had promised my best friend at the time. I had done some social work so for a few years before joining. And my best friend, he was going to get married. Before I joined, I told he had asked me to be his best man at his wedding. So I didn't shave up because I wanted to keep my promise to go to his wedding. So when I left the temple to go to my hometown, that was in Northern Ontario, I remember bringing a couple of books, a couple of boxes of books, Bhagavad Gita's and Srimad Bhagavatam, and stopping at the Ottawa, at the Toronto Temple, which was on Girard Street. That was before the Avenue Road. That was the first real, I would say, heavy kirtan, nice kirtan. This is a wooden floor here. They had a wooden floor there that was a little bit different from your wooden floor. I mean, this is a nice, solid wooden floor. At the Girard Street Temple, this was a few days, I think it was Gaur Purnima day, I was on my way back to that wedding, stopped at the temple, and the temple room was full of devotees. It was, the Girard Street Temple was an old house, and the floor, I mean, I'm not lying, when the devotees would dance, it was like a springboard. It was an old house, and the floor was practically about to cave in. Anyways, that was a very that was some of my first experiences, and then going to my hometown distributing these books. So these books, And that is why Srila Prabhupada has always given so much emphasis, and I was happy to hear this morning, you know, the results of last month's book distribution here at the Chopadi Temple. This book distribution, as we all know, has always been so very dear to Srila Prabhupada because, as Prabhupada would explain, when I see one of these books distributed, I feel as if I have conquered an empire, isn't it? That these books are so powerful that even one book can convert or bring in a whole country to Krishna consciousness, you see. So when we distribute thousands of these books, and this is one of the specialties of many of our temples here in India, especially very powerful book distribution, especially during Christmas marathon, Jayanti. So this is very, very inspiring, and I'm happy to see that this is going on here. Anyways, I did go to my friend's wedding, and then immediately, because the other two devotees who had joined the temple, who came to India with me, I was a little bit envious of them because they shaved up before me. I couldn't shave up because I had that commitment. So anyways, I was anxious to come back, and the first thing I did after coming back is that I shaved up, although I was already staying in the temple a few months. For those who may be, you know, new devotees or newly coming to Krishna consciousness, maybe I'll finish on these words because I would like to leave some time to hear a little bit from Jananivas Prabhu and possibly take some questions from devotees also. Just want to maybe conclude or reiterate, especially for newcomers, that at least my own personal experience, and you can verify that, I'm sure, by speaking with other devotees who have been serving Srila Prabhupada's mission for a number of years, that what Srila Prabhupada has given us and continues to give us, although he is not physically present with us, this is actually, I would say, the proof of his potency, the proof of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement's potency, is that, at least for myself, I can only speak for myself, but I can also attest and see that in other God brothers who are also serving very enthusiastically, that Srila Prabhupada has given us something very, very extraordinary. The teachings that he has given us from the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all these Vedic literatures, if we simply apply them, having faith in these words of Srila Prabhupada, we will be able to experience what Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita. I was mentioning that a little bit this morning. Susukam kartam avyayam. That this process of bhakti, of devotional service, which provides us all with unlimited opportunities to render service. If we simply pray for the mercy, we simply pray for that mercy from Srila Prabhupada, from the devotees, from Krishna, and from Lord Chaitanya, that mercy will come in the form of unlimited service that needs to be done all over the world. I thank Srila Prabhupada. I thank all of my God brothers. And I thank all of you who are here also for their presence and for their convictions and their enthusiasm, which is also serving as an impetus for me to continue in my service. So You are all very fortunate to be connected with the Chopati Temple. You are very, very fortunate to have His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj as your inspiration and guide. I have not been so fortunate to get his association over the years. Maybe Krishna will change that a little bit. Looks like he is, actually. I'm deeply indebted to him for his devotion and dedication to the movement, his example, and also personalities like Janani Vas Prabhu, with whom I served in Mayapur for many years. These are the kind of this is the kind of association, and these are the kind of memories that we want to take with us. As we were reading this morning in the purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport, that when the time will come for us to leave, those are the kind of thoughts and desires that we want to have, to nurture, to keep within our mind. And they will actually carry us wherever Krishna wants us to go. If Krishna wants us to again come back in this material world, I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't mind coming back even as a very insignificant animal. But as long as it is close or in the home of Vaishnavas, as long as there is going to be some opportunity to render service to the Vaishnavas, this should be our desire. It is my humble prayer that I can, in whatever little way, continue to render whatever little service by the mercy of all of the Vaishnavas and by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Shamin Iti Namini Namasti Sharasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharini Nirvishisha Shanyavari Prashata Deshutarini Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Garadha Shibashari Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So thank you very much for inviting me here, Radhanath Maharaj, and allow me to have your association and the association of all the devotees here, and my old friend Raghav Maharaj, Raghav Pandit. He was Raghav Pandit Brahmachari for those days. And to associate with devotees who have these wonderful qualities is very inspiring, because devotees are like touchstone diamonds. They reflect the qualities. So just being in their association, you can get reflection from them. So this is the actual situation. It's embarrassing when we're devotees are glorifying other devotees for them. But the understanding is that when they're speaking glories of different devotees, the devotee's understanding, actually the glorification, it simply goes to my spiritual master. Because anything you see in me, any kind of qualification you see in me, is actually belonging to my spiritual master. It's simply reflected. It's actually a borrowed quality. So I can't claim to be my own quality. And actually, if you look deeply, you can't see in my heart. Maybe you can, but I can. But I try to conceal it. But actually, within my heart, the qualities are there. That I'm full of gum, crowd, low, more. This is actually what I'm made of. But by association with devotees, you actually borrow some of his good qualities. And then you can try to put them into practice. And practically we have seen that devotees, the association with Srila Prabhupada, they have such good qualities, they're doing such great work. And they leave Srila Prabhupada's association and they lose all those qualities. And they're selling t-shirts in the street or something like that. So it's a fact, these are borrowed qualifications, and we should never, devotees never think that they're their own qualification. Sanatana Goswami is such a nice example. And the devotees are saying that, no, but we see in you, you're claiming that these are not like your qualifications, but we see you, how learned you are, we see your humility, we see what great devotional qualities you have, how you can speak so eloquently on devotional topics, how you can write so much. You can't deny it, because we can see these qualities in you. We can see all these qualities. And he says, yes, what you say is true. What you're describing, this is correct according to Shastra. What you're describing is true about all these qualities. He said, but actually, he says, this is not applicable for me because I am not devotee. He said, they are applicable for a devotee. But I am not devotee in my heart. Therefore, they're not applicable to me. So this is the a devotee's mentality. In this way you see the devotee is very humble. He has the great quality of humility, because he's not considering that he has any kind of these qualifications. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvatiko warns that don't try to be accept praise and honor above other devotees. He said, this is the worst. There's no one more condemnable than this. Because the devotees, they actually purchase Krishna. They actually, the lords of Krishna. And to think that I am better than a devotee, or I am superior to devotees, is in other words saying you're even you're superior to Krishna. Because Krishna is controlled by his devotees. So we should be ever ready to sweep away with the 100 pointed broomsticks, these wicked desires we have in our hearts. A very nice example, this 100 pointed broomsticks. In India we have the 100 pointed broomsticks. In the West we don't have it. Maybe someplace. But you take the coconut leaf and you take the outside off and that hard piece inside, very hard and pointed. So you get a bunch of those, you bind it together and you get a very strong, stiff broom. And it's very, very effective for cleaning. And so you can clean very easily with this 100 pointed broomsticks. And if there's a lot of dirt there, difficult to get up, maybe in the rainy season it starts to stick, it goes, you know, it's potcher, it's sticky, it's yucky. It doesn't sweep up with a regular. So then you put the broom on it, flat ways, and you put your foot on the broom and you in the bathroom and places like that, you put your foot on the broom and you scrape it up like that. But even if that doesn't work, you get the broom, the ends of the broom all together, in your hands like this, very tightly. And you get down on your hands and knees and you scrub and you scrub and you scrub. This is what it is needed to clean the heart. Whatever it takes, we must be prepared to clean all of these dirty things from the heart. This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing us in the Gundicha Marjanam. Clean so thoroughly, again clean, and then again in the cracks, every grain of sand. This is how diligent we must be in keeping the heart very, very clean. So Srila Prabhupada has given us a very simple process, actually, to clean the heart. Very simple. And he's given us these four regulative principles: the do nots, no illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating. And that cleans the heart. When the heart is clean, then you can perform devotional service. So then the positive things, always be rendering devotional service to Krishna with favorable attitude, chanting Hare Krishna, association with devotees, taking Mahaprasad. This is the Prabhupada's simpler formula. And if you follow this, undoubtedly your heart will become very clean. So, practically this is all we've got, all we have to do. Some devotees ask, you know, do you think Krishna is testing me like this? You think it's a test of Krishna? No, this is actually the test that Prabhupada has given. That's your test. It's Krishna's test. You just follow that. That's sufficient. And if you pass the test, then you have no problems. You can go back to Godhead. One time in Hawaii, Prabhupada was given an initiation lecture. And he said, I'm giving you these four regulations now, these rules and regulations. He said, and they're not so difficult to follow. He said, but if you do not follow, I cannot help you. It means if you follow, he will help. So he has to set some standard. For Krishna's interest, the devotees think of Krishna's interest. So, to protect Krishna's interest, then they give you some standard. That is why that standard is there. And it's not so difficult. One devotee, he said, Swamiji, he says, you are denying the basic principles of life. In the way, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. He said, these are the basic principles of life in the West, of course. You are denying us the basic principles of life, Swamiji. So sometimes we find it difficult, or we say it's so difficult to follow these things. So it's so difficult for me to concentrate on Hare Krishna when I'm chanting japa all the time. How I can keep focus there? My mind is always going here and there. It's so difficult. So it means that the mind is stronger than the holy name. So, but the mind will tell you so many things. It's so difficult. How can the mind be stronger than Krishna? How can the holy name of Krishna is none different than Krishna? But somehow or another, they make excuses. Oh, it's so difficult. It's so, mind becomes so powerful. And we find the easy things difficult and the difficult things easy. We reverse the situation. It's so difficult, we don't want to do it. We don't want to clean the heart. But when it comes to putting dirt into the heart, oh, we like that. Sense gratification, oh, we like that. That's putting dirt in the heart. Yeah, we like to do that. But when it comes to cleaning it, oh, we don't like to do that. This is our condition. So, it's difficult for an embodied human being to follow. It's difficult, and we're not denying it's some difficulty, isn't there? But so we must perform austerity. But people say, well, you know, why we should do something that seems so difficult and unnatural? Why not be? Why we are so strict? No, but it means austerity is there, because the human form of life is meant for that. This is the actual real purpose of human life. It's meant for austerity. Brahmacharya tapasya. The very given of life is meant for tapasya and austerity. That austerity is meant to clean the heart so the good qualities can develop. To know Krishna so you can serve Krishna, so you can love Krishna. That's all. That's the whole purpose of everything. All these rules and regulations. Simply so you can know Krishna, so you can render service to Krishna, and you can come to the point of loving Krishna. Just like we've heard the story of Raghav Maharaj. He's running this 30 dacoits armed with bombs. They're not just holding them, they're throwing them hither and thither. Fully armed. He's running. He's just picking up his stones. That's his only weapon, whatever he can find on the way to, and destroying, facing a mob with great bombs. What qualities that means are there in that? What courage? Now he's become a hero. And Krishna will be waiting for him with a hero's welcome when he goes back home, back to Godhead. But Krishna's not expecting that from you. He did that voluntary. That he did voluntary. Simply for the welfare. He was just simply protecting Radha Madhava's interest. That's right. He just thought, this is Radha Madhava's interest. He had no care whatsoever for his body. No care. And we're worried, it's a little bit difficult for me to follow these four regulative principles. Look at the example of Raghav Maharaj. Krishna's not expecting you to run into a band of dacoits. He's not going that far. And we're thinking, it's so difficult. But look at Raghav. You develop these qualities, you'll do anything for Krishna. So it's not such a big thing to give up. So the whole purpose is that Krishna's not, and Prabhupada's not given these rules and regulations as any kind of punishment or to be unkind or anything like that, but simply to give you something much greater. That's why he's doing it. But he wants to make sure you're serious. He wants to give you Krishna. He wants to give you Krishna service. He wants to give you Krishna prema. Golokira prema dana harinam sankirtan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give Krishna prema. His followers and devotees, they've come to give it. That's all they really want to do. That's the only thing they want to do. But they want to make sure you're sincere. So here is what you do. If you can do this, it will show your sincerity. This is, we're longing to give to you. Please, just follow the... When we see you're sincere, we will give. Two hands. There's a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the poor man. He saw an astrologer, and the astrologer said, I don't know why you're lamenting in such a poverty-stricken condition, because your horoscope says you're a very rich man. You don't know that your father left a great fortune for you. But unfortunately, he was somewhere else and he died. But he never told you where the treasure was buried. But I can tell you where the treasure is buried. And he told him the place. He said, but if you dig on the north side, there is the big snake lives there. And certainly that snake will devour you and swallow you. If you dig on the southern side, there's so many wasps' nests. As soon as you go there, they'll all attack you. They'll give you so much problem, you won't be able to dig. And if you go to the east, west side, see, there's a Rakshasa, there's a ghost there. And he will give you, so he's guarding the treasure. So it's useless to ask someone who's guarding the treasure to give you treasure. So he will give you so many problems. But if you go to the east side, you very easily get that treasure. So he's given the example. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the example to Sanatana Goswami. That yes, there is a great treasure that is within your very own heart. But we are like the poor man, we've forgotten it's there. It's become covered. But it actually is a great treasure. And how do we get that treasure? How do we reveal that treasure that's there? Within the heart already. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. It's our natural constitution that to love Krishna. It's already there. It's simply covered. It's buried. And we can't see it and we've lost it. It's like wearing example is given, you wear a very valuable jewel on your chest. Very valuable on the chain. But you forget it's there. All the time you've got your shirt on. You might as well not have it. You forget all about it actually. So like that, we were carrying something very valuable with us since eternally. But it's covered. So he says that to try to find this treasure by going to the side where the wasps are is like trying to find it through karmakanda activities, by fruitive activities. Being pious, etc., like that, pious activities, or karmakanda activities where you can even go to heavenly planets, etc. These are like wasps, because what you're doing in that, you just, by karmakanda, actually, you simply keep yourself in a repetition of birth and death. So it's just like wasp, you're just getting stung and stung again and again, it's useless. And if you go to the other side, where the ghost is, it's like following the path of Gyan. I'm trying to find this treasure through Gyan, through knowledge. And with the speculative mind. And how can the mind understand Krishna? A material mind, how can it understand something that's spiritual? Krishna says, Parikshit Maharaj, he asks this question to Sukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam. How can you understand Krishna who is transcendent, even through the Vedas, because the Vedas are coming down through sound, which is material. They're expressing through material means. So how can you understand through material means the transcendence? Because the Vedas deal with three modes of material nature. So through the Vedas, how you can understand transcendence? So same thing, there's a Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur is commenting that he said even the devotee is meditating. But he puts the picture of Krishna there also, he sees the picture of Krishna. But Krishna's smiling and he says he thinks he can approach me. He thinks he can approach me by simply by putting a picture in his mind, which is material also. He thinks he can approach me with Krishna smiling. He said, but because there is some, he's a devotee, and there's some devotion there, and he wants to know me through devotion, then I can reveal myself to him. But he can't understand me. Even if he holds his picture in my mind perfectly, if he's a perfect yogi, Ashtanga yogi, which is the black snake, the Ashtanga yogi, you do yoga generally with the ultimate goal of merging into the existence of God. It's like a black snake that swallows another snake. You just swallow yourself up. You're trying to lose your identity, your spiritual identity, by becoming one with the all-pervading absolute. It's like a spiritual suicide. You're swallowing yourself like a python. You're committing suicide. So but the eastern side, when you dig there for the treasure, that is the path of bhakti. There, or just you dig a little bit, immediately the treasure comes to life. Why it comes to life? because you can't approach actually Krishna even with material elements, with material mind, materially. No, by Krishna's desire, he makes himself known to the devotee. Because we are in such a limited condition. How we can understand the limited? We are finite and God is infinite. How can the finite understand the infinite? Not possible. But if the unlimited wants to make himself known to the limited, or the infinite wants to make himself known to the finite, that is his prerogative. That's no problem for him. So like that, when Krishna sees we're approaching, through the process of devotional service, then he's very pleased. He quickly removes everything. He reveals that great treasure within. And that's all that Krishna wants. That's the only message that Krishna gives when he comes here. And he sends his representative. Any incarnation or messenger of God, they never come here and say, try to make a happy situation in the material world and you'll be happy. That you never get that. It's always the same message they have. Whenever the Lord comes, whatever incarnation, whichever messenger, it's the same message. Simply try to develop your love for Krishna, that's all. Don't waste your time trying to make a happy situation in this material world. Because you won't get it. You'll be bitten by the wasp, you'll be haunted by the ghost of the mind, and you'll be swallowed by the snake of impersonalism. So this simple process of bhakti that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us, Prabhupada has presented to us, so easy, so simple. We just have to follow it, that's all. Just follow those words from the pure devotee. That's all he's expecting us to do. And then Krishna says in Bhagavatam, even though the heart's not even fully clean, even though it's not completely clean, still Krishna will manifest. He will manifest in there, even though but starting to get clean, Krishna, because it's difficult to, as long as you possess a material body, it's difficult to become completely pure from material contamination, because the material body is a contamination. Just like the gopis, they take birth where Krishna is performing his pastime in a gopi family. They have developed so much, they're advanced so much, they've taken their birth, they see Krishna. They can start to go Krishna. Krishna's playing his flute and calling in the Srimad, and some of them can't go. Some of them are restricted from going to Krishna. Others can go. And it mentions, So they simply meditated on, they were stopped by their elders, by their husbands, brothers, fathers, etc. You can't go out at night time, it's not good. They were checked. So what did they do? They simply meditated on the beautiful form of Krishna. And it said, of course, it says there's no contamination, but if there was any hint of contamination from there, material coming from the material world into this position, if there was any slight trace of it, he said, then their meditation on Krishna, if they had good karma, if they had a lot of good karma still, because pious activities and good karma is also, you've got to take another birth to work out your good karma. Now that's also an impediment. So if they had any good karma left, if there was any trace, because that's also contamination, the material contamination. So if there was the contamination of good karma, the result of good karma, if you get happiness. You get happiness from good. If there was any good karma, contamination of good karma there, then their meditation on Krishna, the happiness that they got by seeing, meditating on Krishna, they felt such ecstatic happiness that immediately burn up any karmic activity and happiness that they were to. So superior to any karmic happiness. Immediately burn all of that pious activities to nothing, to ashes in a moment. And any impious activity, trait of impiety there may have been, which causes suffering, Impiety means you get, as a result of impiety, you get suffering. Any impiety there may have been, that was also completely burnt to ashes by the pain that they experienced in not being able to go to Krishna. The separation was so great that the suffering they had coming due to their impious activity, that was also completely burned to ashes. So after that, then they could go to Krishna. The example is that as long as you possess a material body, there will be a little bit of contamination. But Krishna is so kind anyway. He said he'll come and sit in the heart and he'll take care of everything. So you don't have to worry. Krishna is so, it's not that you have to be so super spotlessly clean. Krishna will come and he'll clean away the remaining dust and make it very easy for you. And Prabhupada also gave some concession one time. He said if you're something like 80%, just or something like 80% Krishna conscious, okay. First he said you've got to be 100% Krishna conscious, and everyone was. And then he said something like 80% Krishna consciousness. Some devotees were, it's better. And then Prabhupada looked around and he said, then 75% Krishna consciousness. Hari Bol, Prabhupada, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. And as Prabhupada was leaving, he turned around and said, and if you can't be 75% Krishna consciousness, catch hold of my dhoti at the back. I got the back door key for the Goloka Vrindavan. So this is the kindness of a devotee. If you are sincere, it's not that they're so super strict about every little thing, but if you are really sincere, because you must commit mistakes having a human body, even the devotees will overlook that. If you are sincere, and this is what is really required. The Harinam Chintamani mentions that someone is coming from a very pious background, so it's easier for him to approach Krishna than someone who's coming from impious. So, but one who actually, especially in Lord Chaitanya's mission, that one who is initiated into Vaishnava mantra by a bona fide guru and a bona fide sampradaya, then he doesn't have to worry about his previous good karma, bad karma. It's said that because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give, what's he giving? He's giving service. This is his gift. He's giving service. Nitya Krishna Das. We are the eternal servants of Krishna. This is what we need to be established in our constitutional position. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give. Service to himself. Because he is Radha and Krishna. So all that's required here is the faith and sincerity. And so the Harinam Chintamani says, now the impious person has been initiated by a Vaishnava in Vaishnava mantra and a bona fide sampradaya, and the pious person has also been initiated. So who's going to make more advancement? Who will make more rapid advancement? It says, the person who is more sincere. If the person coming from an impious background is more sincere than the person coming from a pious background, he will make more rapid advancement in the revelation of the Holy Name. So I said it's just a quick question of sincerity. But there's no question of karmic activities from previous karma. That's not considered. As long as you remain fixed in devotional service, karmic activity cannot be considered. So it's just sincerity. And that's all Prabhupada is actually expecting from us. He's given these four simple rules and regulations and the process of devotional service. He's simply asking to be sincere and follow this and all perfection will be there. And we have such wonderful examples of Bhakti Raghav Maharaj. Very, very sincere, very great. His Holiness Radha Maharaj. Now, so sincere. And simply by their sincerity, Look what he's created. Again, you're all sincere. You're reflecting the qualities of Radhanath Maharaj. So to serve Bhakti Raghav Maharaj, he asked me to say something about before he came to Mayapur. So if you don't mind, I can take 5 minutes before Maharaj can speak. I know you're all waiting for him. But I'll tell a couple of incidences. We were there in the beginning of 1972 in Mayapur. And at that time was just the Bhajan Kutir was there. And Srila Prabhupada came. And he stayed in the Bhajan Kutir because that was the only place there was. I just had a little partition, little chatai, bamboo chatai partition, where Prabhupada's bed was. And then his desk was there. And then there was another partition, and his secretary was there. And then all the devotees were in the other half of the Bhajan Kutir. And Prabhupada, he seemed very happy when he came to Mayapur. I specifically, vividly remember he got out and he started walking. He was so happy. He was smiling like anything. And he was rubbing Achyutananda's head like a little boy and smiling. And when he was perfectly at home, Prabhupada was perfectly at ease. There was no running water, no electricity, no amenities whatsoever. Little bathroom we had to dig out the back. And Prabhupada was completely undisturbed by the circumstance. Same schedule he would do. He'd go on a morning walk, come back, do what he did. Nighttime he would put the mosquito net around the bed, had a kerosene lantern, would light it, have a typewriter, do his translation work. He's just coming from LA or somewhere like that. They've all electronic equipment and dictaphones and the electronic Prabhupada, same schedule, we had a typewriter, tap, 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 tap. Got his books there, previous, the chariots, and just going, exactly this. Wake up early morning, go for morning walk. Maintain this, wherever he was in the world, it didn't make any difference to him. He was so fixed in his service to his spiritual master. And practically that was his main service to his spiritual master, was translating Srimad Bhagavatam and distributing the books. He got direct order from his spiritual master to do that. And or in relation to that, there's a story about the mosquitoes, because we were right on the bank of the Ganga, and practically it was very undeveloped at that time. You could see for miles and miles. You could see over to Namadweep. You could see Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. You could see the Jogpit. Every direction, it was just flat. Now it's all built up. You can't see so much, and trees everywhere. But at that time, it's just rice fields. And so, of course, when you light a light there, there's nothing. All the insects for miles and miles around, they come to the light at night time. So you'd be full up with these mosquitoes. It sounded like, you know, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony when you're in the buzzroom. It's literally thousands of mosquitoes. And one time, Prabhupada was sitting there with Guru Das was by his side. And mosquitoes, you know, going like anything. And Guru Das, he leaned over to Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, do they have any mosquitoes in Goloka Vrindavan? And Prabhupada leaned back and he said, if they are, they're all chanting Hare Krishna. But Prabhupada, he complained about the mosquitoes. As soon as I put my hand out to get something, you know, some book out, and he said, immediately they come and all attack me. He didn't like the mosquitoes. We would have to burn cow dung and everything in there, and to get rid of all the mosquitoes. And it was really stinging our eyes. We'd be sitting there crying. Prabhupada didn't affect Prabhupada. He liked it. He said, my Guru Maharaj used to have his chapatis cooked on cow dung. He said he always liked that, so that they would always cook his chapatis on cow dung. So some dislikes. Saintly person also has dislikes. He didn't like the mosquitoes. He didn't like people who snored. And we were warned when we were there, Prabhupada's coming. Bhavananda, anybody here who snores at night? They can't stay here. Does anybody snore? He's drilling everyone. No, we don't snore. Of course, in the middle of the night, Prabhupada's there, Bhavananda. Someone's snoring out there. He goes out, because we were sleeping on the veranda and everything. He found the devotee was snoring. Hey! Go and sleep under the trees. He said he had to sleep under the trees. And another time he said, Tamil Krishna Maharaj was snoring. He said, Tamil Krishna Maharaj, you're snoring. No, I'm not snoring, Srila Prabhupada. He said, yeah, you were snoring. It's Srila Prabhupada, I don't snore. He said, how do you know if you don't snore if you're sleeping? So he didn't like the snorers or the mosquitoes. And another thing he didn't like, and that was the doors slamming. This was a bit later in the Lotus building. He said the devotees would leave the doors open and they were slamming in the breeze. He said, and he didn't like that. That they don't even know how to close the doors properly. And he told Bhavananda, he said, I'm translating these books and commentaries from the Acharyas. He said, and I come across a point and I want one word to express the mood and the feeling of what the Acharyas want to say. I want that English word. I'm putting in it. I want this, to find this exact word to express what the different Acharyas are saying. And I can't quite get that. He says, sometimes it takes me 3 days just to find the right word to put it in Srimad Bhagavatam for us. Anyway, he said, that when I hear these doors slam, it cracks my heart. Because he's so absorbed in writing Srimad Bhagavatam. And that was his service to his Guru Maharaj. And therefore, Prabhupada had dislikes. What did he dislike? He disliked slamming doors. He disliked the mosquitoes. He disliked snorers. Why? Because they simply interfere with his service to his spiritual master. So you can have dislikes. Anything that comes in the way of the order of the spiritual master, you can dislike it. So Prabhupada was showing us that was his priority, to simply to execute the order of his spiritual master. But look at the Prabhupada went through just to that staying up. He gave up sleep anyway. Prabhupada gave up sleep for us. He said, I don't get time to translate in the daytime. It's so much distraction. He said, I was praying to Krishna. Please, Krishna, please let me not be able to sleep at night. Please help me stay awake so I can try it, because it's very quiet then. He gave up his sleeping for us so he could give us Srimad Bhagavatam. When Prabhupada first arrived in the Bhajan Kutir, he said, we told him we had one cow named Kamaduk, and she gave birth to a calf. And she was going to give birth the same time Prabhupada arrived. So when the cow gives birth, for the next 20 days or something, so many days, you can't drink that milk. It's called I can't remember the name. It's kind of thick and it's kind of slimy. It's for the calf, so the calf can get the milk, especially for the calf, nature's law. So it's not really for human consumption at that stage, as soon as she's given birth. But anyway, before Prabhupada came, the cow had a miscarriage and she lost the calf. So by the time Prabhupada came, the milk was good. It was good for humans to drink. It was, and so they told Srila Prabhupada that this is what happened, and she had a miscarriage and she lost the calf. And Prabhupada said that miscarriage was caused by Krishna. He caused that miscarriage so that when I come, I could get milk from the cow. He wanted me to take milk. Srila Prabhupada ki. There's lots of memorable experiences there. Because actually it was the first time I could do some personal service to Srila Prabhupada. And I gave him, the first time I ever gave Charanamrita to Prabhupada, which I did forever since that time, whenever Prabhupada came in. So it was one of my eternal services to Prabhupada while he was here. But the first time I gave, we were there in the Bhajan Kutir and he came out and I offered Prabhupada, my hand was going like this. And even I was surprised. I think, why is it shaking like that? It's completely uncontrollable. And Prabhupada was looking at me smiling. And I had to pour it in. I guess Maya was realized she's got to get out of it. You know, as soon as you start serve a pure devotee, Maya's lost her residence, you know. I guess she was getting scared. But it was uncontrollable. I was surprised myself. And another time, he was sitting on the veranda with his godbrother, Damodar Maharaj, who was our next door neighbor. And I went to offer him Charanamrita. And I said, Charanamrita Srila Prabhupada. And he was just sitting there. And he just... It was such a... For me, it was, you know, because he was... You know, as Raghav Maharaj says, Prabhupada's stature was quite small. He thought he was... I had that experience the first time I met Prabhupada. At Dumdum. Dumdum Epa. I was expecting a giant. After reading Prabhupada's books, I thought, this is so powerful. His words are so moving. He must be a giant. I was expecting the airport to start boom, rumble and everything when it came. I was also surprised. But that was the mood we had with Prabhupada. His words were so grave in his books. And then when we met him, he was so... And so it was such... You know, he's our savior. He's our Lord. He's our master. And suddenly he's like a little baby and you're feeding him. It was such a change of consciousness I hadn't experienced before. He just put his head back and held his mouth open and let me feed him like a little baby. It was such a contrast from my relationship with him at that time. And one thing is very memorable, I cannot forget. He gave me an instruction there. Because if you get instruction directly from your guru and you make it your life and soul, that is your perfection. So he gave me an instruction. And not only that, he very mercifully implanted that instruction. I can't remember what the conversation was, but he was talking to Bhavananda because he would generally talk with the managers. They would have... But I was sitting with Bhavananda and Prabhupada, we were just talking, he was discussing so many things. Then he said to Bhavananda, he said, this boy, he said, he should have help, because I was the only pujari there. I just had to do everything, morning to night. I loved it. But anyway, he said, he should have help. He said, he is an ordinary person. Siddha Sarup. He gave me my Sarup. I'm an ordinary person. Anyway, he said that he's an ordinary person. He should have help. Then he said to me, he said, you should train up pujaris. He gave me an instruction. He said, you should train up pujaris. Okay? And I said, yes. I just been given the service. I just got my Brahman initiation a few months before. And there was no one there to teach me puja anyway, so I didn't know what I was doing. He's just telling me, train up pujaris. This is really cool. And most probably I would have forgotten all about it, you know, just train up pujaris. So then after we were leaving and we was walking, I had one foot out the door. I was halfway out the door. And Prabhupada said, train up pujaris. You hear me? And I stopped. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. So he not only gave me mercy, he really drummed it in there. You hear me? Okay, I'll tell one more story, and then Maharaj can speak. There was a devotee named Dujahari. I don't know if this was the South American who came with you to. Anyway, he's actually in India last year. I don't know if he came here. Dwija Hari from South America, Prabhupada disciple. First time I've seen him since that time, but we were having a discussion. I said, do you remember this story that happened, this incident with him? Because they would take that khajur ras, you know, the khajur tree, the date trees, they cut it in the winter time and they get the one sap and they make the date gore from it. But before, if you get it early in the morning, they drink it. But after sunrise, it becomes intoxication. It goes fermented. It goes into intoxication. Anyway, the devotees were taking that date ras early in the morning. But Bhavananda, he didn't like it. He was the president. He didn't like the devotees taking this intoxication. So when Prabhupada came, he wanted to stop it. So he said, Srila Prabhupada, he said, the devotees are taking this date ras, and it's a very, very strong intoxication. And every morning, some devotees are going and drinking this. And Prabhupada said, oh. Well, he didn't say anything else. Then in the evening time, because people go for a darshan in the early evening, and devotees were sitting there. And then this Dwija Hari, he's a South American. He's like, I think he was a Marine, tough. Someone said he was also involved with Mafia, so he was kind of a tough guy, you know, before. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, he says, sometimes me and the boys, we take a japa walk down the road and we go to where they're making this date rust and we take a few of these. It's really nice, Prabhupada. It just sounded like, you know, me and the boys, we go down to the bar and we knock a few back. The way he said it was so funny. And Prabhupada was going, yes, yes. So now Prabhupada, he had two sides of the stories. He heard Bhavananda's story. Then he didn't want the devotees to take it. And then he met the devotees. And he said the devotees, they liked it. So now Prabhupada had to solve the dilemma. So then the next morning, we go for an early morning darshan. And we're all in the Bhajan Kutiri Prabhupada. And then his servant, Shruti Kirti, came in. And he had some date ras in the glass. And he put some in Srila Prabhupada's glass. And he says, Srila Prabhupada, here's date ras. Would you like to try it? And Prabhupada looked at him. He drank it. You take some of this and give it to all the devotees. So then his servant put it in another glass with all the us, and he went round and gave all the devotees. Bhavananda was sitting there. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much. Very good. You have to speak.
So since all of you who are present here today have been sitting for quite some time, This may be the custom during the Sunday feast program. We'll have a small kirtan now. And since everyone's been sitting for a long time, if you like, you can stand up. And we can have a kirtan standing up, which will be possibly a little more enlivening than sitting down. Okay.